have a life. I mean, I am a blind person. A lot of us get isolated, especially in our handicaps. And when we have you to speak with and to care about and to listen to, it makes our lives so much more beautiful. Your poetry, your love is absolutely very seeable in my spiritual self. And I also want to say, I miss Monroe. I know he was cantankerous and strange sometimes, but he was always kind of amusing. And it was always interesting to hear what he had to say. But especially Max, I want to say, introduced me to BAI with the Golden Age of Radio.
He's a good friend.
Oh, he's wonderful. Yeah. And he's such a wonderful character. He is so
that's exactly right.
He is so honest, so absolutely himself. And I wish to always be myself as much as I see him and some of the rest of you be, because we need you.
Well, I want to thank you for seeing us in our beauty.
Well, we need to support the station. I've even had problems with premiums and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't matter,
yeah.
You know. None of that matters because it's the station that matters.
All right, I gotta go.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time and the love.
Good night.
This is Earthwatch. Last call here.
Yes, hello?
Hello? I'm sorry, it's hard to hear. Call back next week, please. For all those who have come and gone, and who are here in the permanent spirit of WBAI, I give thanks for being part of this party. My name is Robert Knight, and this is Earthwatch on WBAI New York. We'll be back next week. And also, shout out to Margot Adler and Jim Freund for their great reminiscence and celebration last week. Hour of the Wolf coming up. Thank you for listening. Send me an email, rknight, R-K-N-I-G-H-T, at WBAI.org. This is Nomsa Mazwai from South Africa.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, 41st year. My name is Jim Freund, a weekly program of science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and, oh yes, the imagination. With me this morning, Mike Cole. Now, I know all of those of you listening to the radio know that Mike is M-Y-K-E, but he's also with the USCG. Well, just stay tuned. Good morning. All righty. First of all, last week, number one, I want to thank Robert Knight for having donated his airtime last week to the purpose of conducting the 40th anniversary of this show. I was just thanking you, Robert, but you were out there, so it was in delay.
Great show.
Did you hear it?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how can you not have a great show with Adler in the room? It's not. It's basically not easy.
And she had the same smoothness, grace, and comfort as ever.
No, really. And there was, you know, and with her, of course, there's no preparation. I swear, you know, that if I hero worship anybody, it's her.
It's like Prince's daddy said in Purple Rain. No, I don't have to write it down.
Right. Yeah, I only saw that movie once. You know why? Because that movie... Well, anyway. I didn't. It's not even one of the seven words, but it belongs. It just, you know...
So you're not
he's
into the
not
Baroque.
I don't think that particular gentleman is a great film director. That's not to say he couldn't be in a good movie. But I don't think he should write and direct them.
Are we talking about Prince?
Yeah. Yeah, the prince or whatever, you know, the formerly known as.
I think he was the symbol for a little while, and then he changed it back. So I think he's back to being prince.
Or as
he's more commonly known, his purple badness.
Prince Rogers Nelson.
Right.
Right, there you go. And you know, Anthony Sloan claimed that his name was, I think it's number 6 on the list. When he went to the symbol.
Oh, no. But that word is preceded by the word sexy.
MF. Which means fair. MF means fair. That he was a mofo. And you see, that's one you can get away with. That's one you can actually do. And we're in safe harbor anyway.
Yeah, mofo is a mamma jamma.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway. Thank you, Robert, for allowing that. But you're not Edgar Rice Burroughs fans, right?
Mars as a kid, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Who knew that?
Okay, you and I have to talk. You know what March 9th is?
No.
It's John Carter, the movie.
And why?
Get out.
And
you
why,
haven't seen the trailers
no,
for it?
And
no.
Why is John Carter, the movie, opening on March 9th? Mm. Why is that such an easy date to remember? Why would the U.S. government be putting out stamps to commemorate John Carter on March 9th? It's the 100th anniversary of A Princess of Mars, of Edgar Rice Burroughs' first book. That's why Disney Pixar is putting John Carter out on March 9th.
I hope that movie is good because I've been watching that trailer and it could go either way.
It is It's directed by Andrew Stanton, who did WALL-E. It's written by Michael Chabon, you know, who has at least gotten one Pulitzer Prize for his writing. It's
promising.
It's promising. And, you know, the problem is the D word, the Disney word. But it really came out of Pixar.
Can you say Disney on the air? Is that – I don't see it on
– It's safe. It's safe harbor. Up.
Yeah, one of the greatest movies ever made.
Oh, no. I love that movie.
I mean, how can you watch that without crying? It's not possible.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
You watched the first 17 minutes of that movie without crying?
And speaking as a
person...
I cried.
Good.
And speaking as a person with a very square-shaped head, I identified with a lot of the characters.
That's because you're military. That's because you're military. That's why the square-shaped head.
That's right.
I hope everybody listening to the radio understands this. the best Pixar film, I'm sorry, is WALL-E.
Haven't had the pleasure yet.
Oh my God!
Whoa. It's a great movie.
WALL-E is one of the 10 best films of the aughts, of the first part of this millennium.
And is a fairly accurate representation of the future of our great nation.
It is.
In terms of us all. You'll see what I mean when you watch it.
Oh, my God, I'm going to go and pirate that tonight.
No SOPA radio.
That's right, yeah.
Why didn't I hear one person say no SOPA radio during that whole thing, huh? Never mind. Okay, you go see WALL-E, and then understand that Andrew Stanton, who wrote and directed WALL-E, is the person making John Carter.
Okay, I'm on it.
And I guarantee...
That does not guarantee the movie will be good.
Oh, yes, it does.
All right, fair enough.
Oh, no, you mean John Carter.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
No, WALL-E is good, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I mean...
And by the way, when it comes to judgment of creative works, I'm never, ever wrong. So you are absolutely, you have 100% ironclad guarantee that is a good film.
So let me say that, by the way, on March 6th, the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings will be, and I've known this now for 90 minutes,
right,
will be a Barsoom reading, will be a John Carter of Mars reading, as hosted by John Joseph Adams from his new collection of Barsoom stories.
That's fabulous.
Now, who's reading yet? We haven't figured out.
Fabulous.
We'll have to work that out. Hmm. So, but Robert, that means that with March 9th.
39,
yeah. Now, you and I are preempted on March 8th. Again.
Pourquoi?
Women's Wear Day.
Oh, no.
Women's.
No more contendering.
Women's. IWWD.
No.
The International
Women are doing it for workers. Themselves. I respect that.
The internet.
I'm required to by law.
What's the day? What's the day?
March 8th is the International Women's Wear Daily or something. It's
International Women's Wear?
It's International Women's. What's the
International Women's Day?
Thank
oh,
you.
Oh,
I think the IWW part of that is very.
That's wonderful.
Appropriate.
I don't want to be wobbly, but
you got to.
But I was a wobbly. The WBAI union in 1977, Robert.
Get out.
Was affiliated with IWW. For God's sake, our lawyer was Gus Hall. We weren't pink; we were red.
Yeah.
Hmm.
We were bleeping red. Oh. Then you people go in and bring the United Electrical Workers. They're merely pinkos. We were red, man. Forget the pinkos. We were, you know, full spectrum.
Oh, I'm in a room with a bunch of communists.
You're on WBAI. It's even worse.
Well, communist radio.
Keep
that in mind when the guard revokes my commission.
We wish we were that organized.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Actually, you know, we don't have the cards to carry.
Actually, we're not.
No, true story. True story. My grandparents were Soviet communists.
Soviet communists.
Because for the same reason that all Jews were back then, when they get liberated from the concentration camps, who breaks them out but the Soviets?
Yeah.
So they became Soviets. Those were my grandparents. So I think they'd probably be rolling over in their graves if they knew that I'd gotten a commission in the military.
Aside from the doctrinaire, there is a beautiful tradition of resistance to racism and totalitarian social structures.
That's true.
And many of the early cross-cultural experiences I had to do with people like that.
Mm. At any rate, if you take a look at the pitching schedule for the thon that begins next week. You're on in your normal time next week. I'm on at my normal time next week. After that, we're all overnight preemptions. But I am sure that if I got free copies of that Barsoom book.
Oh, hell yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, let's work on that.
And you and I could do a Barsoomy thing together.
Hmm. Wasn't he that lawyer in that movie about the attorney who
That's
worked for the devil?
Yes, exactly. And that John Carter guy who used to...
I can tell it's going
to
be a great show.
He used to catch for the New York Mets. And have you ever noticed there's never been a science fiction TV series that hasn't had somebody named Carter in it?
Ooh,
Star Trek, maybe.
Wasn't there a President Carter?
Oh.
Jimmy Carter? Jimmy Bob Carter.
Bob, yeah.
I remember something about that.
No, Jim Bob was the brother. Bob, no, that was Bob Jim.
Whatever
it was. We've wasted 15 minutes.
Well, it's just as long as you don't make me recite the president.
A 90-minute show.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
This kind of banter is creating intimacy with our audience.
There we go. Hopefully not too much. But we haven't developed, we have high def radio, but we don't have that kind yet.
Right.
Thank God. and I'm sorry, I was just thinking of some of the shows we had on the station in the early 70s. And if there was intimacy on the radio at that time, there would have been a lot of arrests. More arrests than there already were.
Right.
At any rate.
Right.
Let's see. The first thing I usually do on the show are announcements.
Okay.
Therefore, let me announce that, okay, February 6th. No, 7th. You see, I keep doing that. I keep saying February 6th, but indeed it is February 7th. The first Tuesday in February, okay? That's when we do the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, which is not Hour of the Wolf. People somehow get that confused because I produce both.
Right.
But I didn't, I founded neither. Gordon Van Gelder founded the New York Review of Science Fiction readings.
Really?
Absolutely.
I didn't know that.
That's why it's affiliated with New York Review of Science Fiction.
The guy who is currently...
owner and editor
of FNSF.
Of Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. That is correct.
Right.
He started that reading series.
Right.
And then there were... I recorded it from day one.
Uh-huh.
But that's all I was the recordist and broadcaster.
Okay.
But I took over the series, about 8 years ago.
Hmm.
And there have been at least seven or eight curators. And nowadays, I have lots of guest curators. But I curate it a lot as well. And during ReaderCon, which is my favorite convention, I don't go to that many conventions nowadays.
And I think that's where we met for the first time, right? Was at ReaderCon.
That's the story I was about to tell.
Right, go ahead.
During ReaderCon, which is in July, passing in a corridor, I met Mike Cole, M-Y-K-E. I don't remember why we were talking. I was right outside the green room. It may have been because I was hanging out with Terry McGarry, who is the kind of person with whom one hangs out with as much as one can. if for no other reason, because she was the copy chief of The New Yorker for years.
Really?
You didn't know
that? No, I did not know that.
Oh, for like, 15 years, she was the copy chief, the copy editor.
Huh.
I mean, the only other big job like that in terms of copy editing is the New York Times. And, the New Yorker is the height of literacy. So to be the copy editor of the New Yorker was, quite
a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, it really was. Never mind the fact that she's a fine writer and a lovely person and somebody who I've known for years and years. So I was talking with her and this fellow comes by and we start talking. And I said, "What do you do?" He says, "I'm a cop." Oh, that's funny. My landlord is a cop, all that, and we're talking later, and then I see Terry, and I said, "But what?" He said he's a cop, but then he ran away. Oh, you got a phone call.
That's right.
And
it might have even been from my command.
It was an official call.
Right.
The way you answered, I knew.
Right.
The way you answered, I knew. And I said to Terry, "What kind of a cop is he?" And she said, "He's not a cop. He's Coast Guard." Mm-hmm. Now, okay, we can get into how they are the same thing. To my mind, Coast Guard is, can you say merely military?
Sure. I'll take merely. Why not?
It's a part of the military, and you don't tend to think of the military as I don't tend to think of the military as police. And when I think of federal police, I tend to think of the FBI, or T-Men, G-Men, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, well, no, T-Men as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Treasury Department. But G-Men are Treasury, right?
Right. Well, I mean, I think that the term G-Man is always referred to just government guy. If you're representing the federal government in an official capacity, you'll sort of get that derogatory G-Man.
I think if you're in a G-Man, it means you're in a Warner Brothers movie. I believe that's exactly what it means.
You have a thin black tie and a flash device that you use to erase people's memories.
Yeah, are those T-Men, G-Men? Now, there's a character named G in those movies,
right.
But that's about it.
Right.
At any rate, I said, "Oh, well, G, afraid that one of my favorite people and a semi-regular guest on this program, Robert J. Howe, Bob Howe, was in the Coast Guard. He loves to talk about that."
Mm-hmm.
And so immediately I ran into Mike again 10 minutes later,
right,
and heard about this wonderful new book, which was coming out next February,
right.
Which would be, oh, gee, now. And
January 31st, actually.
January 31st is the official pub date.
We're coming up on, gee whiz, 5 days. Can you believe that?
Ooh. But it probably could be bought today.
Oh, it can be pre-ordered, but you're not going to be able to download it onto your digital device or get it off the shelf or have it shipped from whatever warehouse it comes from until January 31st.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Although sometimes I have seen books available in bookstores 2 days, excuse me, 2 months, certainly often 2 weeks.
I'm not going to be upset by that. I'm happy to have people to have it available.
Some people have been upset by that, but that's a whole other story. And I've never actually understood quite why they're upset by that, but they are, Anyway.
Yeah.
And I immediately thought, okay, aside from the fact that we'll have to do a show
right.
when the book is coming out,
right.
We have to do a Coast Guard reading. I'd like to throw together themes at the New York Review of Science Fiction readings.
Now we're gonna have one departure from that theme, which is Saladin Ahmed is gonna be there at the reading too.
That's right.
And I think that that's just a great thing. I got to spend a lot of time with Saladin at Confusion, which is a convention.
Okay, so you do know who he is.
Oh, not only do I know who he is, but we co-DM'd. I don't know, Jim, if you're a Dungeons & Dragons
guy. No, I had noticed the D&D. If you look at his bio, he says, I owe it all to D&D. If you look at your bio, it says, I spent a lot of time at D&D.
Right. We co-Dungeon Mastered an all authors D&D game at Confusion, which had seven very well-known fantasy authors.
Confusion was this year's Worldcon.
No, Confusion is the major science fiction and fantasy convention in the Midwest. It's held every year in Troy, Michigan, just outside Detroit.
Ah,
and this year,
which is why Saladin was there, because having twins, baby twins,
right.
still babies pretty much, he doesn't get to travel a whole lot.
No, he sure doesn't, so it was local for him.
Yeah.
But it had, the Saladin and I were co-dungeon masters, and the players included Patrick Rothfuss, Peter V. Brett, Scott Lynch, Jim Hines, Elizabeth Baer, Brent Weeks, and Joe Abercrombie, all the way from England, and Jay Lake, and sat in to substitute, and Yanni. I'm not going to try to say her last name because I forgot it. I don't want to butcher it. It was a representative from Subterranean Press, which is a local publisher there that helped support the convention. So it was a fantastic experience to Dungeon Master for all those.
Yeah, see, in my days, the main Midwest con was, Midwest Con,
right.
actually.
Was which the was, name of it, Midwest
was,
Con.
Was the name of it was in Minneapolis, and Minicon.
Fabulous.
Was also out of Minneapolis.
Wow.
Midwest Con was Kansas City.
Are those still going on?
I don't know that they are.
Hmm.
But this is my day, which is like 30 years ago.
Right.
When I went to a convention a weekend.
Wow.
This year, I'm actually probably going to 5, if you include the Nebula Awards.
Wow.
As one of them.
You're going to the Nebula Awards.
I'm going to the Nebula
yeah,
Awards.
Yeah, I need to get on that and arrange for a ticket because I want to go again this year.
Yeah, it
gives me an excuse to wear my my service dress blues, which I always do at banquets.
Ooh, there you go. And
were you there last year?
No, I was not. Arrangements were made too late, but it's usually held in a different location each year. Last year and this year, it's in D.C.
Great.
And I like going to D.C.
Yeah.
It is the best museum on the continent.
Yeah, it's really wonderful.
You go to the mall, and then you just zigzag from museum to museum to museum. I mean, you could spend a week in the Library of Congress.
Right.
And, you know, and feel how many people, I don't care what your politics are, how many people can walk into a place, realize that this place is paid for totally by your tax dollars, and feel proud? The Library of Congress is such a place. Even if you don't like the copyright office,
right.
The Library of Congress is still.
You know, I moved up here from D.C. 9 months ago. I lived down
actually,
there.
Actually, I did know
oh,
that.
Oh, you did
yes,
know. Okay.
I did know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes the Nebulas attractive to me because I got friends I can crash with when I go down.
Yeah, yeah. And I have friends in D.C. as well.
Right.
I won't discuss more about that because it can be sensitive. But
oh, sure.
Anyway, but at any rate, that's the thing about knowing people who work there. See, can't discuss it necessarily a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah.
Either they're very public or they're very not public.
Well, the standard answer when you meet people in D.C. and you say, what do you do, which is the standard question anywhere on the East Coast, is you get a lot of people who just sort of shrug and say, oh, I work for the government.
Yeah.
And not give you any more information. And the polite thing is to not ask any further questions.
Yes. Now, I know some people who will say, I am a civil servant. That's even more modest and less information.
Right.
Than
right.
I work for the government.
It's, right.
I'm a civil servant.
Right. I always say I'm with the government. I'm here to help, which
yeah.
Which gets varying responses.
Yeah. But what really turned me on to the concept of Shadow Ops, mm-hmm. which is the name of your... Now, it's not a trilogy, right? It's a series.
Yeah, well, it's a trilogy. We're under contract for three books now. The first novel is called Control Point. The second novel will be called Fortress Frontier, and the third will be called Breach Zone. If the fan response is good enough, I would be...
Then it'll spread out from there.
That's right. That's right. But I've got plenty of other ideas for other originals titles if we want to close at a trilogy.
Yeah. Now, would you call this military fiction?
I would call it military fantasy.
There's a huge amount of military science fiction. It's been, you know, I mean, Bane books practically made a division of it.
Yeah, this is not...
A main division for many years.
Yes, this is not that. One of the things...
No, that's the fun part, is that it's not that.
And you know...
And I like some military science fiction. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of it, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. David Williams from Washington.
Sure.
That's wonderful stuff that he writes.
It's great stuff. My favorite military science fiction writer is Jack Campbell, who is also known as John Hemry. His Lost Fleet series, which is now up to, I believe, 6 books.
I don't know him.
Oh, it's fabulous. The first book in the series is called Dauntless, and I'd love to hear what you think of it. I don't have anyone who's read it and not been blown away by it. And it's military science fiction in the classic mode, big Starfleet battles, mm-hmm. the kind of stuff that...
Well, I like David Weber and...
Sure. John Ringo.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like a lot of that. I find it totally immersive.
Oh, good. Well, then I think you'd love Jack Campbell. And Jack Campbell is also he's retired Navy, and he and I worked at a lot of the same command. So he blurbed the book, so I feel a big connection to him. Love his stuff.
That's very cool. Yeah. But military fantasy.
That's right.
That is not so common.
You know, maybe I'm flattering myself, but I don't think it's been done before. I'm combining hard military stories, and we're talking at the squad fire team level. It's a counterinsurgent.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have to mention, when I think about it, because I don't necessarily even think of it as military, my favorite.
Sure.
The Dorsai books.
Oh, right. Of course. Or Glenn Cook's Black Company.
Well, those are great, but... Gordy Dixon and the Dorsai books are part of the Golden Age.
Got it.
And therefore, so let me qualify that by saying the Dorsai books are my favorite Golden Age.
Right, right. What you got to keep in mind, Jim, I'm a lot older than you, so we have some different generational...
You weren't born when I started doing this radio show.
You know, Jim, when you get to be when you reach my age, you'll have a different perspective, I think, on science fiction and fantasy.
If I'm living backwards, then I'll reach your age.
Right. Anyway, yeah, I mean, look, I never want to make sweeping statements like that no one's done this before, because you're always wrong. But I don't know of anyone.
I can't name a second.
Right.
I've got a pretty good knowledge, and no doubt you do too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anyone else who's done it before. So you have sort of hard military stories at the fire team level. It's counterinsurgent. It's blurring the lines between military and law enforcement. It reflects the kind of wars you're seeing in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the kinds of big questions about the role of the military that we're facing as a nation today. And we're blending with that a lot of the high fantasy elements that we know from Dungeons and Dragons and from Robert Jordan's books and from Peter V. Brett's books. And I'm sure hoping that resonates. But the big questions that the series is trying to ask is, I worked at the Pentagon for a long, long time, and I saw what a rigid bureaucratic organization it is. And I understand that when you're trying to get hundreds of thousands of people who have the power of deadly force and billions of dollars of taxpayer money to swim in the same direction, process and regulation becomes the most important thing. And I began asking myself, well, how would these people regulate magic? And of course, the first thing the military does with any cool new thing it gets its hands on is it wraps it up in red tape and makes it boring as hell. And I wanted to know what kind of red tape and what kind of boredom would magic would affect magic. And those questions really started to bug me when I was working at the Pentagon back in 1998. And the only way to get him to quit was to write a manuscript, which was called Latent. And it became the genesis for the novel that is Control Point, which is what kicked off the Shadow Ops series.
So this is almost 15 years in the making, or 12 years anyway.
It really is. And I wrote Latent, and then I put it aside and wrote 2 more novels. And all 3 of those novels went to my agent, Joshua Bilmes, and were all rejected. And the rewrite of Leighton, which became Control...
Rejected by the agent or rejected from the agent's submissions?
By the agent. I wanted Joshua Bilmus to represent me. I knew his reputation for picking winning horses, and I knew that if it couldn't pass muster with him, it was not ready for prime time. And I was so sure of that that actually the manuscript that became Control Point was completed, and I went off for my third tour in Iraq, and the only reason I even handed it to him, I didn't think it was ready, was because, you know, I could die out there. So I gave him that manuscript, went off there, and I told him before I left, I said, Joshua,
said an expletive there, but go on.
No, no, don't. There's a list, actually, of seven of them behind you. Don't say
it's
any of
safe
those.
Safe harbor. It's safe harbor.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
You know, Pacifica, our owners have a problem with those words. The Supreme Court does not. But anyway, it's true. It's true. Well, they have this, you know, it's the weirdest thing. They have this thing called the First Amendment. Anyway, but go on.
Wouldn't know anything about
but
that.
But screw that. Anyway,
right. So I tell Joshua, I'm like, if you like this manuscript, do not tell me, because I'm going to be so excited I'm not going to have my head in the fight. And if you don't like this manuscript, do not tell me, because I'm going to be so depressed I'm not going to have my head in the fight. I really wanted to be a professional writer. And, you know, it's
as anybody in a firefight in Iraq, no doubt would.
Well, the thing is, it's a war. I mean, you really want your head in the game. So, yeah. Of course, as soon as I left, he read it and loved it. And he calls my friend, who's also a big fantasy writer named Peter V. Brett, and says, this is a great manuscript. And Pete goes, well, don't tell him. So for the next 4 months, they sat on their hands and waited for me to come home. And the funny
smart move. Yeah.
Well, and I appreciated it. But the thing that was hysterical was I got home, and this was so depressing. I land at the airport, and all of these people's families are hugging them and crying and picking them up, and there's no one there for me. So I'm taking a cab from the airport back to my apartment, and I call Joshua, because we were also dear friends outside of our business relationship, just to let him know I'm alive. And the first words out of his mouth are, finish this book. It's a great book. And that really changed everything for me.
And so how did it get sold? And
well, then we had 9 drafts of revisions between the two of us.
This is, by the way, especially because 2 weeks ago when we had all of Altered Fluid on this program.
Oh, you did? Wow.
Oh, yes. It's something we do fairly regularly.
So
one of the members of Altered, somebody from the group, in this case Devin Poor, reads a short story. First draft on the air, and then they dissect it on the air.
Oh, I couldn't.
This is like, you know, just open this vein here.
Yeah, I could not
and
do
let,
that.
And
I could
and,
not
and,
do
and,
that.
And let 12 people analyze it and suck from it and all that. That is you actually had a very interesting article in Tor.com this week about how you won't be in a writer's group, but anyway.
Right. Actually, I did. Now, the Tor.com one was about how military experience, I think, benefits writers, which was interesting because...
But it included in the summation, but go on.
Yeah, in the comments, like, a lot of people did not like that article. There was a lot of hostile reception to it, but I did a blog post for another writing group called the Ink Punks. It's, I believe, and I could be wrong on this, a Canada-based writing group run by a writer named Sandra Wickham, who's also a bodybuilder and a fitness consultant, a fitness professional. And there I really went into why I don't like writers' groups. But I could never have my stuff critiqued on the air. Oh my gosh, that sounds like the seventh layer of hell.
But never, yeah, well, yeah, I can host it, I can produce it, but I can't imagine it being done.
No, I couldn't do that. The people at Altered Fluid, of course, like Altered Fluid, it's, how many people are in that group?
12.
Yeah, and every single one of them is some kind of super hot powerhouse of a writer, right? Like, I mean, that's the holy grail of writers' groups, Altered Fluid, as far as I know. You got N.K. Jemisin came out of there. Saladin Ahmed was in there.
Whose first book is just coming out. We haven't even gotten to him yet.
Yeah, that's coming out in, I think, like a week after mine. So
it's coming out on February 7th.
Outstanding.
Is the publication date.
Outstanding.
The date of your reading.
Right, and the title of that book is Throne of the Crescent Moon. And it seems fantastic.
The short story of which propelled that trilogy was premiered on this program about 4 years ago.
You know? Oh, wow. I did not know that. I did not know that. But, I mean, it's gotten stellar reviews, and I'm really, really excited to read it. And we're both with Penguin. And because we're coming out so close to each other and we co-DM'd this game, and at Epic Confusion, this convention I was just telling you about, there was a wonderful and really heartwarming party thrown for Saladin where he was sort of inducted into the ranks of published authors.
Oh, I did hear about that.
There's a wonderful toast from Scott Lynch, who's an amazing writer.
I'm still annoyed at him for having left New York, A, and B, he was going to be on the show. Mm-hmm. The show was still on Saturdays, and he had to leave early. He left like the Wednesday before the Saturday he was going to be on. And
I'm sure you can convince him to come back on.
Well, it's not that easy. See, I don't do phone interviews. Mm. I hate them. I like being, as we are, face-to-face. Mm-hmm. And but he'll be back in New York on the 7th, and before your reading, he and I will record a radio show.
Oh, great.
That's how we're going
to
do it.
I was going to offer to lean on him for you. I guilt him into it. You know, since we're sort of like publishing brothers.
Oh, I can lean on Saladin.
Okay, perfect.
On Saladin myself. Perfect. And he's such a sweetie. He's one of the nicest people.
You should have seen him. As a matter of fact, I have video clips of him and I DMing this game. And I've got to find a way.
I've got to see that, actually.
I've got to find a way to get them distributed. He really is fantastic.
Yeah. And what was I going to say about it? Well, at any rate. this is all getting back to, by the way. So what's happening, and I was trying to convince Saladin to come in on March. Mm-hmm. And then I would actually just have him do a whole reading. And that didn't work. And it turned out that that particular day he had another reading scheduled in Detroit, mm-hmm. where he's currently living. Mm-hmm. And all that. And then it finally turned out that he could get frequent flyer miles to get to New York, mm-hmm. and his publisher could throw a limited budget for a launch party on February 8th. Mm-hmm. So
I really hope I can make that. I've got a Twitter chat already scheduled for some of that time, but I'm assuming if it's Saladin's launch party in New York, it'll probably run pretty late. So hopefully I can wrap up that Twitter chat.
Depends on how long they've got it's taking place in a pub.
Well,
how many hours have they rented it? That's the question.
Well, I'm sure if they run out of rental, they'll probably these are writers. They'll just hang out and drink.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be drinking. Yeah, there's no question. I will be. But at any rate, so I asked Mike and Bob Howe, mm-hmm. the two readers of our official Coast Guard reading,
right,
whether if they would mind. Now, Bob is a member of the writers group that Saladin was in,
right,
and I didn't even know that you were and Saladin were co-D&D people.
Oh yeah, and our books coming out within a week of each other, we're sort of bonded at the hip now.
Yeah, but you were both, I think the word in science fiction fandom is mensches. You were both a mensch about it. Certainly a word Saladin would know well.
In Yiddish science fiction.
In Yiddish, well, fandom, yeah. Of course.
And I believe Saladin is Jewish, right? I think Saladin Ahmed, that is a Jewish name.
He is I'll tell you one thing, he is as Irish as he is Arabic. Don't forget that.
Actually, I won't steal his thunder, but he had some really great quotes on some of his panels about those topics. But I'll leave that for him when you bring him on the show.
Yeah, I mean, when people hear the name Saladin Ahmed, I almost said it right. The Jew in me will take that kind of a name and do a little in there.
I don't think I don't.
And as I am told by WBAI's Barbara Aziz, she says, no, aspirate. You don't do the thing. It's all Semitic language, that's what Semites are. A Semitic person. A Semite is a person who speaks from a particular root of language. That is, Jews and Arabs are Semitic people. Mm. So there. Anyway, for all those people that say, are you anti-Semitic? Well, that means you're anti-Arab, right?
Right.
At any rate. So they're both Semitic languages, but one does a ch and the other one just says a ch. So Ahmed, you're supposed to aspirate on that H where... And sometimes I get it,
Right.
But my background always causes me to do a little in there. You know, it's not Hanukkah, it's Hanukkah.
The only thing he reminded me was it's Saladin, not Saladin.
Yes, and that's the Turkish.
Right.
That's the Turkish in it.
Right.
But at any rate, whatever he is, he's a wonderful person and a great writer.
Yep.
And pleased as anything. So, but it isn't, unfortunately, his reading, and I don't want to do three features, especially because we had a theme. So what we're doing is, usually we don't get started. You haven't been to one of our readings, so you're usually busy.
Well, I've been to stuff at the Soho Digital Gallery. I went to Laura Ann Gilman's...
well, that's a party, but that wasn't an IRSIF event.
Right.
Didn't go to a reading, did you? With her and Keith DeCandido?
No, unfortunately.
No. So you weren't...
But Keith DeCandido was bartending at the party.
Well, of course he was.
I do want the record to show that I was the only person who came to that party who brought Miss Gilman flowers.
Ooh, okay. Mm-hmm. I sent her a nice email.
That's how I roll.
She held that party the same night as something else. And I had had her for a reader before that and a radio show. Mm. Anyway,
But Jim, have you brought her flowers?
There's a song that goes, Jim never brings me flowers.
You see?
No, but I once brought her a laptop.
Ooh, that's pretty good. I can't beat that.
Yeah. Okay.
Can't beat that. I think she's probably better off.
It was a Chromebook, in fact.
Happier with the laptop than she would be with the flowers.
Yeah.
I got her a laptop case.
No, I didn't give her a laptop.
You see, I gave her the flowers. She did not have to return the flowers.
Oh, okay. So you're peddling your worth. Never mind. Sorry. Let's not get started on the
podcast. Right.
At any rate. You haven't been to an IRSIF event, which are different, even though you've been at the venue.
Right.
And by the way, just to make this thing whole thing weird full circle, mm-hmm. Robert J. Howe, Bob Howe, does not have a book that he has written mm-hmm. with his name on it, mm-hmm. but he has an anthology mm-hmm. of Coney Island science fiction stories, mm. which he edited with, get ready for the small world angle, the owner of the Soho Gallery for Digital Art.
Mm.
John Ordover.
Right.
Who used to be, of course, at Simon & Schuster.
Who I met at Laura Ann's party.
I'm so sorry.
No.
Delightful, wonderful. Guy. At any rate, I've known Ordover more than 30 years.
Right.
At any rate. So what we're going to do, we never really get started until about 7:10 or 7:15. So what we're going to do on February 7th is we will get started right on time with Saladin and let him do a bit from Throne of the Crescent Moon. Mm. And then we will go on with our reading as planned.
Now, in order to keep with the theme, I was wondering if I could maybe appeal to the Commandant of the Coast Guard to get Saladin some kind of honorary commission for the duration of the reading.
That would be...
And maybe I could bring my hat for him to wear, or, you know, my Bravo jacket or something.
Okay.
Just so he can sort of fit the bill with the rest of us.
Okay. Photo op, everybody.
And
photo. I videotape things anyway.
Or,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ensign Ahmed.
And I can meet with him, you know, to make sure he understands how to properly salute and make sure he understands enough basic military protocol.
Oh, he'll be big on that.
I'm sure he will.
He really will.
And if you've seen him with his long hair, I think that'll go perfectly with a Garrison cover, so.
I think so.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, you, on the other hand, do not have very long hair.
No.
Everybody watching their radios at this moment.
I have no hair at all. I just got my head shaved before I came out here.
Yeah, so. How long have you been with the Coast Guard?
I'm coming up on my fourth year, and with a little luck, I should be pinning on 03 in sometime in the next month.
Fourth year, but you've been in the military.
Well, I've been in and around the military. So by that is my first two spins in Iraq were as a security contractor, which is a nice way of saying mercenary. And my third tour was as a DOD civilian, a paramilitary civilian, which is to say that I wore a uniform, carried arms, but my name tape said DOD civilian instead of US Army over the pocket.
DOD civilian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a lot of us. After 9/11, there was a weird window of time where contractors and civilians were doing a lot of the work that warfighters and other kinds of operatives were doing. And I think the public had a pretty bad reaction to that. And that window, I think, is largely closed. But there was a period of time right when my career was at its height when we fit in there, we slotted in there.
Yeah, okay. There were certainly some civilians, some mercenaries who were there, of whom I didn't approve. My thinking was, let the military do it.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, and it hurts because, you know, there'll be times I'll be on the subway.
It's also an economic thought.
Yeah, I mean,
I have this thing about the idea of let's keep U.S. money in the U.S. instead of giving it to other countries.
Well, I mean, there were foreign mercenaries employed over there.
Yeah,
but when I was
largely what I'm thinking.
But I mean, I'm an American, and I was working for an American company.
The company I am thinking of is not American.
Well, yeah.
Well, and we all know the company I'm talking
right,
about.
Right. I don't want to get into specifics. You're probably referring to a certain company run by Eric Prince. But but at least with my company, I mean, regardless of whether or not I was privately employed, you know, we were still all taking the same risks and doing the same work. And I'll never forget, I would ride the subway. This is before I went over as a DOD civilian and before I got my military commission. And people
to me, a DOD civilian is somebody who helped design the internet. How many people remember the internet was designed by the DOD? Anyway, it was.
No. Right. It absolutely was.
It's a fact. The purpose of the internet was to keep communications going in case of nuclear attack. The whole point being that it was based on a hub instead of serial topology, so that if one part of a network went down,
right,
communications could continue in various places. So a hub Ethernet topology was required in order to keep communications going, and the DOD commissioned a network, an inter-network of networks to tie in together so that if part of it went away, other parts would still be able to function to each other.
The ARPANET,
they started
right?
with ARPA.
Right.
ARPA was one network
right.
on what became the internet.
Right, right.
But the internet, the language was designed by at Berkeley and by AT&T, mm-hmm. paid for by the DOD. It was a DOD project.
See, isn't the military great?
.mil, the first earls, the first domains were .mil.
Right.
And then in order to justify all of this spending
right.
on this project, they said, you know what? You should include .edu. Education.
Right.
And then .gov so that other parts of the U.S. government could use this thing. And they said, and if nobody's ever going to use it, but why not create also .com for commercial traffic
right.
on the internet? And that
and was, by commercial traffic, you mean pornography, right?
Anything that actually in those days it was anybody who was charging anything, mostly advertisements versus any kinds of services, or if any company wanted to sell their wares, book companies and the like.
Right.
Used book companies were very, very big. And just people, you know, selling and trading books and records and stuff like that.
I heard somewhere that something like 90% of internet traffic was pornography, and the rest is file sharing.
Maybe today,
uh-huh.
but that's also a very poor judge, because what is internet traffic? Netflix is internet traffic.
Right.
So if you start talking about the number of packets that are involved,
right.
Netflix is obviously a large portion. YouTube is a large portion.
Right.
What segment of internet traffic do they make? It's all spin.
Right.
It's
right.
all spin. It's all how you want to count it.
Right.
I have little doubt that there's a great deal of pornography, legitimate and illegitimate. By legitimate, I mean people paying for it and, you know, consenting, whatever. But a lot of it pirated, of course.
Right. Which is terrible. Pirated pornography. That's awful.
Anyway, aren't we coming up and speak like a pirate day again? Anyway.
I don't know.
You're in the Coast Guard.
I'm a Coast Guard.
We don't speak like a pirate. I think on Speak Like a Pirate Day, everybody in the Coast Guard should take note. You're familiar with this holiday, right?
Well, I'm familiar with it, but, you know, in the Coast Guard, we're in the business of bringing pirates to justice. So
that doesn't mean you can't speak like a pirate.
Oh, no. That would
go undercover. Just say R, and everybody will think, you know.
It would absolutely set the wrong example. None of my guys are going to be speaking like
pirates.
None of my guys are gals. Sorry. Are going to be speaking like pirates, that's for sure. We will not have that in my command.
No R-rated talk.
That's right.
At any rate, I mean, I can go on and on. Bearing in mind that I've been online since about 1979.
I was six.
Okay.
I was six.
Online anyway?
When you first got online. No. In 1979, I was not online.
Yeah. I was at that point on CompuServe, and already I met a person on, and I figured, I'm one of the first science fiction people online, except the person I met on CompuServe was named Uncle Orson.
Was that Orson Scott Card?
Absolutely.
Really?
He'd been on years before me.
Oh, my gosh. Years before I was six, Orson Scott Card was online?
That's right.
I think I had just learned how to read.
Speaker for the Dead. I mean, he is so prescient. Well, I don't know how prescient he is. I've got a lot of questions about which comes first in science fiction, the prediction or people who read the science fiction and say, that's cool, I'm going to do that. So could it
be? The Ansible from Ender's Game and Speaker for the Dead really is the internet. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Much like Jules Verne. Although.
Excuse me, but what is it that in the Speaker for the Dead is it that Ender does? He's a blogger. There's no other word for it. He's writing a daily entry about how he feels and what he does, and people respond to it, and he responds back. He's a bleeping blogger.
Right, but the thing is, like with Jules Verne, Jules Verne's writing about the submarine many years before it's invented. Whereas Orson Scott Card is writing about the Ansible at the same time as the ARPANET is out,
more or less. And actually, Jules Verne is writing. I mean, Civil War. There were submarines.
Well, but I guess you're right. It's a fair comparison. That's amazing. I didn't even thought of that.
Yeah, but let's say, for example, Robert Heinlein writes a story in which he has a character named Waldo, and he's so fat that he can only live
Waldo?
In space. Waldo. That's the name of the story.
And people can't find him, and they're asking where he is?
No, not quite.
Okay.
But what they do is he has these devices that bring things from various shelves to him.
Mm-hmm.
If you go into a grocery store where stuff is stacked high,
mm-hmm.
and they have one of those little clamps
mm-hmm.
that pull stuff off the shelves and bring them down,
mm-hmm.
it's called a Waldo.
Really?
Yes.
After that story.
Or they use those also in surgery, mm-hmm. in operations.
And they're called Waldos.
They're called Waldos.
That's fabulous.
Why? Because somebody read Heinlein and said, that's a great idea. I'm going to do that. It wasn't that Heinlein predicted this.
Huh.
It was that people who make things read Heinlein.
So where's my matter transporter from Star Trek?
Ask John Ordo.
Or for that matter, where is my lightsaber?
Well, they're actually asking.
Because that's a really cool idea.
N.K. Jemisin has one, but it's in her phone. But anyway, she made me load it in my phone. That was my other phone.
Oh, it's the iPhone app, yeah.
No, it's not an iPhone. Thank you.
You don't have an iPhone?
No, I don't have an iPhone. I have a Nexus.
I'm very disappointed, Jim. I'm an avid iPhone guy.
But what can I say?
Proselytizer. All right, well, you know, it's gonna be a chasm.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. But a few people would right now say that the Galaxy Nexus isn't the coolest phone out there. Hmm. Let me pass mine over to you so you can play with it.
It is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. Check out the screens and all that.
Oh, man.
No hardware buttons. It's all software. This is running Android 4.03.
It is larger than mine.
This is a 4.5-inch phone.
Not that I'm...
phone. There is
4.5 inches. That's pretty impressive, Jim.
Thank you. I'm talking about the phone.
Right. No, I'm talking about the phone. That's fantastic.
It is, actually.
Yeah. I'm holding up my own phone.
When you get to Jim's,
and I'm sad to say it's considerably smaller.
Yeah. And well, when you get to be my age, you want to be able to read the letters. And, you know, I don't have the eyesight that allows me to read teensy weensy. I reviewed one of the first smartphones ever out there. I don't remember who made it. It was on Sprint, but I wrote a review for a magazine. I don't remember which. And what I said was, you need very, very, very good eyes. You need 21-year-old eyes to be able to read those damn things. Mm. And I'll stick to that. Mm. But one of the things that I love about a large screen is I can read it.
Mm. 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 I just have the small screen with very large print, I guess.
Yeah, but then you have to do a word at a time kind of thing.
Yeah. Not reading a lot of books on my iPhone.
Yeah, I do on my Droid. Mm. Android. Mm. I had a Droid. Now I have a Nexus. Mm. Nexus Prime, as in Blade Runner. Where do you think it comes from?
Oh, my gosh. All of these science fiction references I've been missing all my life.
Every Google phone, every Google operating system comes either from Star Wars or Blade Runner.
That's amazing.
People have never thought, droid? What's a droid?
Well, yeah, clearly that's from Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah, and who did the sound effects for the original Google phones? Ben Burtt, a.k.a. R2-D2. For that matter, he's also Wally.
Really?
Yes. This is not a coincidence.
Well, that's amazing.
But when Google came out with their own phones, this is the third Nexus. The phones are always called the Nexus, and those are the names of the replicants. In the movie, not the Philip K. Dick work, but the movie Blade Runner.
That's fabulous.
So that's why these are called Nexus, and these are the only phones that are actually have Google branding. The others are Android from other places. Mm. The Nexus is Google.
Mm, amazing.
Which, you know, means now that as of like March 1st, we have less privacy than anybody else.
I know. I've long since given up on any hope of privacy. I just live my life flat out in public.
You know who told me that? David Brin. And I'll tell you how long he's been predicting it. I ran into him at about 3:30, 4 a.m. At the Millennial PhilCon. That would be the year 2000.
I do want to pause here and ask if the Millennial PhilCon sounding like the Millennium Falcon is a coincidence or was that by design?
The Worldcon.
I mean, you got to admit, Jim, that's a pretty.
You think it might not be a coincidence.
Millennial PhilCon.
Yeah.
Huh?
I think they worked hard. They had to lie about the year. The millennium.
Because, I mean, Jim, I mean, I'll tell you, like,
everybody got the year wrong for the millennium. Everybody said it was 2000. It wasn't. The millennium occurred in 2001. Because I was never a year zero.
Mm. Mm.
2000 was the rollover year. It's when all the numbers changed. But the millennium began in 2001.
Mm. Huh. Well, that would explain why there wasn't
a decade begins in '01.
Well, I mean, no, I got it. I mean, the thing is, I'm one of those guys.
2010 was the end of the first decade, not the start of the next.
Oh. Well, outstanding. Yeah.
So, at any rate, so the Millennial PhilCon, which is, and I remember easily because it's the last time I went to a WorldCon, because WorldCons are big. I like small. ReaderCon is small. WorldCons are big.
Are you going to WorldCon this year?
No, I'm not, even though it's in Chicago. I'm not going to WorldCon because I am going to World Fantasy for the first time in 20 years.
In Toronto?
You're
going to the one in Toronto? Yeah. I will see you there. I'm going to be there in October. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, yeah. I've actually got a full plate. I'm doing Lunacon because it's our local.
I'm going to be at Lunacon, yeah.
I will be at ReaderCon because I never miss ReaderCon.
I need to make arrangements for that. When is ReaderCon this year?
It's mid-July.
Okay.
Mid-July.
It doesn't conflict with San Diego Comic-Con, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. Then I can probably do that, too.
Yeah.
Because this year I'm definitely going to San Diego Comic-Con.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe a good business move. I would not go. I don't.
what do you mean? Why wouldn't you go, Jim?
Comic-Cons are about movies. Mm. They're not about comics. They're not about science fiction. Mm. They're about movies. Mm. It's a Hollywood event.
Mm.
And while I may enjoy going to the movies and all that. Mm. It's for the same reason that if somebody calls me up from a movie company and says, We have blah, 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 an actor from this film. I'll say, can you get me the writer or the director? I'm interested in the creative process. With all due respect for actors, and I used to work in talent agencies, actors are people who work out the characters that other people devise. And it's a great art, it's a great skill, but it's a different skill set than a writer.
Well, Jim,
I'm into the creation of it.
What if I asked you nicely to come to San Diego Comic-Con? Would that convince?
That and a budget.
All right, hold on. All right, so let's talk about that. I'm going to put a crisp dollar bill right here.
$1 bill.
I'm putting it right here on the whatever you call this thing.
That's a console.
I'm putting it on the console. That's not going to cause any damn or short out the...
It's a WBAI, so we're listener-sponsored, so it works just fine.
All right, well, I'm putting that dollar right there.
Although it's coming from you. It's government money.
You pledge... No, this is... as a reservist...
That's legal tender. You can't fool me. That's legal tender.
The majority of my money comes from writing, not from Coast Guard.
Oh,
so
yeah, I'm sure of that.
It's here on the console. You take that dollar. All you have to do is pledge that you're coming to San Diego Comic-Con. That crisp cash-on-the-barrel-head dollar bill can be yours.
I would put that next to a matching fund. If that gets matched about 1,000 times over, then I could afford
it. I thought you were
going
to say one more dollar, like $2, and you'll go, because I'll put another buck on there.
I don't even go to New York Comic-Con, much less.
New York Comic-Con is a blast.
They need to invite me. They invited me twice, and they haven't invited me since.
Why? What happened?
I don't know. They stopped inviting
because
me.
Because you didn't go. Because you didn't go, Jim.
No. Other way around.
You went and they uninvited you? I don't understand.
They invited me for 2 years and I went.
Oh.
And then they didn't invite me and I was sort of like waiting.
Well, let me lean on those guys. That's not
good. Actually, I know who to talk to.
Okay.
Okay.
Because I had a blast.
I had enough comic people on the show in the last year between, you know.
Do you remember that military science fiction writer I was telling you about, Jack Campbell?
Yeah, I remember you mentioned
him. Myself and Taylor Anderson, who's another military science fiction writer, were on a panel together at New York Comic Con, and we got to do a signing afterward, and it was absolutely the best time I've had.
I would submit that New York Comic Con, though, is more about the creative process of comics and books than San Diego is.
I've never been to San Diego. I can't answer.
Well,
that.
All I know of what comes out of San Diego, and I'm sure I know they have these other things, is if you take a look at the press of what comes out of San Diego, it's about movies and TV shows. Mm. People are all about, oh, there's this actor, there's Joss Whedon, there's this person, there's that person, and that's fine by me. Mm. I am as much of a movie geek and TV geek as many, especially if it comes to Doctor Who or something along those lines. But as a fanboy and as a producer, I'm into the literature. I'm into the creative process. I am. When somebody said, "Why do you think that John Carter has chance of being a great movie?" It's not because I don't even know who's in it. I know that it's being directed by Andrew Stanton and that it's written by Pulitzer Prize winning Michael J. Bond. Now that to me makes it clear, you know, is Moneyball really good because of Brad Pitt? Yes. But isn't it also because Aaron Sorkin wrote the sucker? And that it's directed by, I forgot who directed, but you know, that's the point.
Right.
It's the auteur theory. I'm into the auteur.
That's
Comic-Con,
French, right? Auteur.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's the premise behind what makes a movie good or not. It's that there's one person who is the author.
Well, Jim, what I'm taking away from this is that you're not going to go to San Diego Comic-Con, and so I'm taking my dollar back.
There you go.
Because
if I were in San Diego, I would consider going.
I need it. I need that dollar.
But you know what? If I were in San Diego, I would be more likely to think, gee, who's coming into town that I could record for an interview? And that's what I actually do largely during New York Comic-Con.
Is interview people.
Yes.
Oh.
Absolutely. You know, BEA, the same thing. That's the booksellers, whatever the E stands for, association.
Book Expo America.
Book Expo America.
And actually, I went to BEA this past year, and it actually turned out to be very, very fruitful for me.
I would think.
One of the things, it was an opportunity for me to meet a lot of the folks at Penguin who are not my immediate editors and publicity people, some of the higher ups, which was great because Penguin produces a lot of books every year, and it's nice to have one of their debut authors, especially when you're coming out in mass market, on their radar. So I did a lot of schmoozing at BA.
And we haven't even mentioned in the last whatever that this is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. With me is Mike Cole. Mm-hmm. And Mike, by the way, is spelled M-Y-K-E. Mm-hmm. And the book is Shadow Ops :
Control Point.
Control Point, which is the first of a series mm-hmm. of military sword and sorcery.
Gun and sorcery, yeah.
Gun and sorcery, really. Yeah, right, gun right. and sorcery, which is just a wonderful premise.
Oh, thank
really.
You. Thanks. Very excited to see it come out. Yeah, the first book's coming out in 5 days.
And so you can also, everybody listening can pre-order it now.
Yep.
Or come to the reading. Are we going to have books for you?
We will have books there. I'm also doing a signing at Posman's in Grand Central Station on the 2nd of February at 6:30.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I don't know if you, I'm sure you know Posman's.
Yes, I do.
Real well. Yeah, I'm excited about that because Posman's is sort of your main commuter bookstore for people going on Metro North between Westchester and the city. And
these are probably really good commuter books.
Well, they're mass market. Yeah, they're definitely they'll fit in your pocket. So I guess that helps.
That's why I used to call them pocketbooks.
Yeah, that's right. That's Simon
that's right.
Schuster's imprint.
And who? Yeah, that, which is where Ordover worked was pocketbooks.
Oh, right.
And here's a trivia question: Paperbacks were invented for.
Lining bird cages.
No, aside from that, for the military.
No, really?
So people could carry them around in their sacks during World War II.
Well, I am not going to have guys in my command reading when they're supposed to be working. I don't think I have proof of that.
Well, yeah, but your guys aren't in trenches.
Yet. Yeah. But that gives me some ideas.
There you go.
And let me
correct
it. It's guys,
Coast Guard
guys and gals. I don't want to.
Yeah. Well, guys isn't gender specific.
Yeah, I mean that in the most gender neutral sense of the
yes,
word.
Yes, exactly.
That's correct.
Exactly.
That's correct. No, but you give me good ideas, Jim. I think I'll have them digging trenches as soon as I get back next real weekend.
There you go.
That'll be on the docket for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right out in the water there.
Yeah, that's right. Trenches under the water, yeah.
Under the water, or on the beaches. I'm doing Churchill now. You want to take calls?
Sure. Or did you want to read a little bit?
Why don't you read a little bit first?
Okay, sure.
A nice short tidbit for
okay,
us.
Let's.
I've been having too much fun talking.
Sure. You know, it's good to hang out. I mean, one of the things with being a writer, Jim, is that I spend most of my time entirely by myself, so the chance for a little human contact is much appreciated. Let me read
yourself. You're from Brooklyn. Anyway.
Let me read the second chapter of the book, which is a real, real short excerpt and should give you an idea of the flavor of the book. The chapter starts with an epigraph, which I'll read first. And this is from Shadow Ops Control Point. This is Chapter 2, Lost. And the epigraph is, "That's crap. What choice do you really have if you don't want to join the Army? Life as a suppressed Marine is scarcely better than a prison inmate, and the civilian monitoring program at NIH spawns pariahs, broke and ostracized. A choice between bad and worse is no choice at all." And that's a quote from Loretta Kiwan, Vice President of the Council on Latent American Rights, appearing on WorldSpan Network's Counterpoint. Now I'll start the chapter. Dawes stabilized enough to be moved to the proper infirmary at the 158th Fighter Wing. The entire team wanted to join Britton in his vigil beside Dawes's bed. He had to force them to stow their gear, shower, and change first. Britton skipped the shower and sat in his dirty flight suit, pistol still on his thigh, brooding, as Dawes stirred and drugged sleep. He permitted himself the luxury of kicking off his boots as he reflected on the girl's death, too rattled to concentrate on the after-action report. A newspaper lay on the stand beside his chair, the front page reading, "Mescalero insurgency flares. Two soldiers killed in Selfer ambush." The article featured a picture of an Apache Selfer, his long hair whipped by a summoned storm cloud. Lightning arced from his fingers. He looked at the headline. "They may send me there someday. How can I go after this?" Eventually, exhaustion overcame grief, and Britton's head drooped to the windowsill. He was only dimly aware of Cheatham entering with a sleeping bag. Sent the rest off to bed, the warrant officer said. No sense in all of us crowding in here. Britton mumbled thanks and drifted off to sleep. A breeze washed over his face, and the low rumble of the salvage truck woke him. He opened his eyes, looking out at the window to the flight line for his battered Kiowa, but there was no sign of the truck. His eyes swept over the digital billboard at the center of the tree-lined swath of lawn abutting the flight line. South Burlington Air National Guard, the sign read. 158th Fighter Wing. Green Mountain Boys. The readout reported 0200 hours and 33 degrees Fahrenheit. A narrow concrete path led toward a set of trailers. U.S. Army Supernatural Operations Corps, SOC, the sign above them read. Liaison Office. The rumble that wasn't a truck engine and breeze continued. Was Dawes snoring? Britton looked at the bed. Moonlight dusted through the window, outlining all in silver. Dawes slept. Cheatham was stretched in his sleeping bag on the floor. The rumble pulsed. The gust of air hit him again, warm and foul. Britton turned and stared into a black shape blocking the moonlight. Behind it, a vague rectangle hovered, its edges indistinct. Light wavered across its surface, dancing like television static. Through it, he could see a vast plain, patchy with scrub grass. Adrenaline bullied sleep aside. He jolted in his chair, and the black shape reared, snorting. Long horns corkscrewed toward him. His mind recoiled, his skin going cold with shock. This can't be real. An instant later, his training bulled the shock aside. Later, deal with the threat. Go. He punched the creature hard on the snout, knuckles cracking against a plate of solid bone. The thing grunted and reeled away, stumbling into the corner. It vaguely resembled a bull, bunched shoulders hulking with muscle. Its slick hide shimmered and blended with the shadows, forcing Britton to squint to see it. Its broad snout snuffled, rumbling like the salvage truck. He heard Cheatham shout and called out, "Give me a damn hand here!" as he pursued the thing, hammering it with his fists. It crouched, curling under the rain of blows. Reality shivered up his arm with each connecting punch. He wasn't dreaming. Cheatham rushed to his side, seizing one of the horns. The thing heaved, tossing its head and sending the warrant officer sprawling across Dawes, who awoke with a yell. It stormed toward the flickering portal, which snapped shut, vanishing and plunging the room into darkness. The creature turned, blinking in confusion. It lowed, a throaty mix of a moo and a growl. Britton drew his pistol and thumbed off the safety as it lowered its head and charged. He twisted, avoiding the horns and catching the bony plate of the creature's forehead against his bruised ribs. They howled anew as the thing drove him to the floor. Britton couldn't see Cheatham or Dawes, and not wanting to risk shooting them, he pounded its head with the pistol butt, jarring uselessly against the hard bone. He pivoted on his hips, unable to throw the creature off. It drew back its head, jaws opening to reveal rows of dark teeth. Britton saw Cheatham rising beside Dawes's bed, well clear. He jammed the pistol into the thing's mouth and pulled the trigger. It whipped its head whipped back, and it fell over on its side, vomiting black blood. It lashed its tufted tail, kicked outward, and went still. He leapt to his feet, training his pistol on it. His vision grayed out, and he awakened to a sense of drowning. An invisible tide suffocated him with its intensity. He felt his veins bulge with the force of the flow, penetrating his muscles, trilling in his nerves, saturating the pores of his skin. His legs went weak, and Cheatham gripped his elbow. "You okay?" Cheatham asked. Britton closed his eyes and cursed, feeling the tide pulse through him. He recalled the videos the Army had made him watch, films with titles like Basic Magical Indoctrination and Facing the Arcane. A drowning sensation was the first thing they stressed. Britton knew the invisible current he was feeling had a name. Magic. "My God," he thought, "that was my gate. I brought that thing here." His stomach heaved. "I'm latent. This can't be happening. Not to me. Not now." He made for the chair. Cheatham's hand tightened on his elbow, holding him fast. "Give me the gun, sir." The warrant officer's voice was hard. A gate snapped open just below the ceiling, hovered for a moment, then disappeared. Britton's shoulders spasmed as the current surged through him. "It's you, sir, isn't it?" Cheatham asked. Britton nodded. "I can't control it. I feel sick." He heard shouting. People were coming. "Just give me the gun, sir," Cheatham said, "and I'll help you sit down. You can rest for a minute. Then we'll go get Harlequin." Britton recoiled. "No, Dan. Portomancy's a prohibited school. They'll kill me." The door opened, and a sleepy-looking orderly in blue scrubs appeared. "What the hell's..." He trailed off as he noticed the corpse that was not quite a bull, then fled. "Jesus, sir," Dawes said weakly from his bed, propped on his elbows. "You're a effing probe?" Warrant Officer Cheatham. "You gotta..." "Shut the hell up, Dawes," Cheatham said. "I've got this." "Let me go, Dan," Britton said. "You saw what they did to that girl. They'll kill me." "You don't know that, sir. You haven't attacked anyone with it." Cheatham sounded lighthearted, but he held Britton's arm like a vice. He moved to block the door. "Maybe they'll ship you off to one of those Marine suppression lances, or you can go into the monitoring program at NIH. Maybe they'll take you to that secret base and train you." "There is no secret base. You don't believe that conspiracy theory crap. Probes don't get a break. They disappear," Britton shouted. "Christ, Dan, how long have we worked together? You got to help me." Boots pounded in the hallway. Dawes sat up, wincing in pain, and shouted, "I'm in here, help!" Britton leveled the pistol at Cheatham's face. "Let me go, Dan. Christ is my witness. I will shoot you." Cheatham didn't budge. "Go ahead, sir. How far do you think you'll get? You give me the gun and turn yourself in now, and you have a chance. You run, you're already dead." Two military police officers appeared in the doorway, pistols drawn. One gasped at the sight of the creature. The other leveled his gun at Britton. "Drop your weapons, sir. Get down on the ground right now." Another gate slid open to Britton's side. Beyond it, he could see the plain again, rough grasses rustling in the wind. Britton's eyes flicked to the MPs, then to Cheatham. It was his chance to turn himself in, to lean on the system he'd faithfully served to protect him. But his mind's eye was blotted out by the image of the dead girl's face. His ears rang with the sound of the single shot that had cut off her life, echoing on the school's rooftop. Cheatham gripped the pistol barrel, still pointed at his face. "So, sir, you gonna shoot me?" "Hell, Dan," Britton said. "You know I wouldn't shoot you." Britton let go of the pistol, slamming his knee into the warrant officer's groin, hauling Cheatham's body between himself and the MPs. "Sorry, Dan," Britton said, and shoved him hard into the MPs, then turned and ran for the gate. Britton heard the sharp report of a pistol and felt a burning in his calf. He struck the gate, rippling edges breaking apart to admit him. Oscar Britton landed hard on rough grass, pitching forward under an unfamiliar sky.
That's fun.
Yeah, that's
and good. That was from Shadow Ops: Control Point by
right.
Mike Cole, read for you by the author here over WBAI, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM. If you would like to call up and speak with Mike, we've got, 10 minutes left.
Sure.
Only 10 minutes left. So
is that very little or very much?
That's very little.
Oh, okay.
That's very little,
okay.
Especially because I tend to be very, well, loose.
Oh, okay.
With phone calls. It's like, keep it.
Just with phone calls, though.
Well, obviously right. with our right. conversation as well.
Okay, right, so right.
It's a loosely run ship here.
Sounds good.
On Hour of the Wolf. But the telephone number is 212-209-2900. But while it's a loose ship, I'll tell you this much. It runs on course.
Okay.
In other words, that is to say, if you're off topic, you're off the air.
Fair enough.
Indeed. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Cole, fascinating, fascinating. Do I get the impression that you have a Mescalero Apache insurgency in this volume?
Yeah, I do indeed.
Now, I have to tell you, next week on PBS, they're running the story of Geronimo.
Oh, wow.
On the American Experience.
Have you
rerun?
Have you ever heard of the alternate history book Apacheria?
No, but tell me about it.
It's just that it's an alternate history which theorizes that I don't want to spoil it for you. That let's say Geronimo was a heck of a lot more successful than we know him to be, and
well, you know,
it goes from there.
With 43 warriors, he ran the pants off 1/4 of the U.S. military under Crook.
He sure did.
We'll talk about this on the 7th. But let me ask you a couple of quick questions.
Sure.
By military fantasy, you include or exclude writers like Eric Flint, S.M. Sterling, Turtle Dove, and that lot, or do you put them in another category?
I mean,
they're alternate history.
Yeah,
what? They're not really fantasy.
Well, yeah, Jim, but some of them do use, well,
fantasy tropes?
Yes, they do.
Such especially, as?
Well, S.M. Sterling in his Peshawar Lancers, which I consider to be one of the finest standalone books ever written, uses some Hindu magic.
And by the way, you know, I have a great love for S.M. Sterling.
I do too.
Because you know I'm in the Coast
Guard. Actually, so do I.
You know I'm in the Coast Guard, and the Coast Guard cutter Bark, our Pride and Joy, the Bark Eagle, figures very largely in the island, an island in the Sea of Time.
That's right. It's true. Now, my second question, and I'll let Jim get to other calls, because I will see you on the 7th.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to this. You mentioned the Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a fan of nostalgia movies?
I'm not sure I'm familiar with that.
Okay. Did you ever see two cliffhanger serials from the 1930s, both involving the Coast Guard? 1935 SOS Coast Guard, starring Bela Lugosi as the villain.
What are these, Republic?
Yes. No, Don Winslow. No, SOS Coast Guard was either Mascot or Independent.
Oh, Mascot. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the second one, Don Winslow of the Coast Guard, which is a Universal serial.
Hmm.
Which, in fact, he's fighting the Japanese. The original Don Winslow of the Navy, he's fighting the Germans under Scorpion as the villain.
I've never heard of these, but you've got to help me. You got to help me find them.
I will see you on the 7th.
All right.
Congratulations.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay. And good morning. You're on the radio. Yep. No, you're not. You're a dial tone. Good morning. You're on the radio. Hi. Turn on your radio, please. We're on delay.
Yeah. My radio. Okay. Listen, I thought that Ursula Le Guin invented the Ansible.
Yes.
Okay, so then Orson Scott Card just took it another place?
They each, yes. I mean, it's a word. It was a word before Le Guin, and it was a word before Scott Card. But Le Guin used it earlier. She was using it in the 70s. I wouldn't be surprised if Scott was using it as... he may very well have taken her concept of an instantaneous communications device revolutionized science fiction almost as much as faster than light travel.
Can what's the book that she invented in it?
A series of books, just her entire universe, Rokanen's world, and all of her early science fiction is all set in one universe.
You know, because for me, seminal Le Guin is the Earthsea trilogy, which is really what...
which is fantasy, but this is her science fiction, Herovitz world. Her science fiction is very good. Earthsea, maybe among her great, great stuff, but... help me, what's the great, great novel of 1965?
Caller, can you fill us in here? What's that novel?
I can't. I'm sorry.
Come on. One of the greatest novels ever written, and I'm blanking on the name. It certainly turns up in The Lathe of Heaven, but it turns up in all of her extraterrestrial science fiction.
Right. Outstanding.
Because the whole point of her Ansible is the idea of instant communications, which is as important than faster than light travel, because this way stuff can happen concurrently in other worlds. It's a very, very important writer's device. Mm. And I think Scott may have taken it from there, but Scott was also very familiar with the internet. I shouldn't even say really so much the internet as with online communications. Because CompuServe and the like, the source and online services of the late 70s, early 80s, were not the internet.
She was before that, all that.
She's before that.
Yeah, so that's, she's beautiful. I liked her literary fiction.
Left Hand of Darkness, by the way, is the novel I couldn't come up with.
That's it.
And The Dispossessed. I mean, you know, these are some of the great books of SF.
Mm.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Okay, have a great morning. Thank you. Take care. And good point. I when you said Ansible, I was thinking, and I had even forgotten that Scott used that phrase.
No, I'm pretty sure he calls it. He does call it Ansible.
I think he does, but I think that's a tip of the hat.
To Le Guin.
To Le Guin.
I did not know that.
And if and when the opportunity arises, I will ask him, although I got, annoyed during our last interview.
Oh, understood. Yeah.
I had Scott on the air, on the show, live in studio, the day he won the Nebula Award for Speaker for the Dead.
I know there's a lot of controversy around his reinterpretation of Hamlet, I believe. I haven't really gotten up to speed on it, but I know there's something going on right now.
My problems with him are not about his fiction.
Mm.
It's about what he does outside of the fiction, and I'll just continue, therefore, to read his fiction and enjoy it on that basis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because that's the thing to do at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
When I knew him, and as I said, I mean, the last time I met him and spoke with him face to face was Speaker for the Dead, and I interviewed him about a year and a half ago. You're just going to stand outside there, Lister, instead of coming in. There you go. It's like,
hey, how are you?
You know, the face at the door instead of. he has longer hair than you've got, by the way.
Slightly, yes.
Lister's
slightly.
Hair.
I wish you guys could see the dreads. They are epic.
Does your hair actually reach the floor? I think it does.
Oh, wow, man.
Let's see.
On the floor now.
It is on the floor, yeah. With merely a slight bowing of the head, Lister's hair actually is probably the only reason WBAI's floors are clean.
That's fantastic. These are some epic dreads for those of you watching at home.
Yeah.
Absolutely epic.
Yeah.
How long did that take you to grow?
Let's see. 17 and a half years.
Oh, well, that's just 17 and a half years. No biggie.
Is that all? Not Coast Guard issue.
I think we'd make an exception. I'd have to write a waiver for that.
I don't know. Dreadlocks sounds like a kind of a ship. It would be a great name. The U.S. Dreadlocks?
USS Dreadlocks.
USS Dreadlocks.
Or actually CGC Dreadlock in this case, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't you think?
Make a good destroyer.
I got destroyer. Give me a break. Make a good bong for you anyway.
Oh, my God.
this
show.
This is mild for WBAI. You have to bear that in mind. People should be aware that they, all of those of you who are online should go to mikecole.com, mikecole.com. And that is a portal to all things Mike Cole,
yes,
which include the appearance on this radio show, the appearance at the New York Review of Science Fiction readings on February 7th with Bob Howe, and special cameo appearance by Saladin Ahmed, who hopefully will be made a Coast Guard cutter for the day.
Is Lister taking off his pants?
Probably.
Yep, that's what that looks like.
Yep.
He is taking off his pants.
Yep, that's what he does. I mean,
wow.
Yeah. Been doing the show in this slot now for about 13 months, and from the very first show, where my first guest was Rick Bowes, he took one look at Lister and said, "It's the God of Love."
Wow.
I swear, that's exactly what he said.
Wow. Well, I just for people, if you do want to come on the 7th of the New York Review of Science Fiction reading, I can almost guarantee that none of us will remove our pants during the course of that event.
Speak for yourself.
All right, fair enough.
Okay. I mean, you know. there are people, there are issues, but at any rate, yes, that is what will be coming up, and it's going to be thrilling. March 6th, our readers are going – I don't know who our readers are going to be, but the topic will be Barsoom. 100th anniversary is March 9th of the creation of Barsoom, the publication anyway. And April is going to be Eliodon Johnson and E.C. Myers,
Are two absolutely fabulous writers. I can't recommend them enough.
And Eugene, another person having his first novel out.
Yes, yes.
Fair Coin.
Yes, Fair Coin. Which is so far... So far, we're really, really excited about it. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and Elia has had a fourth, fifth book,
right.
Who knows?
Right.
It's the second book in her vampire series.
Right. Both wonderful people and excellent writers.
Yeah, really, really. So, Mike, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And it's always too short. And again, Shadow Ops. Control Point is the first book in the trilogy. But as I said, just go to mikecole.com. Mm-hmm. That's with a Y, mikecole.com. Mm-hmm. And that will lead you to all things.
Yep, look forward to seeing you there.
Okay, so thank you again. And thank everybody for listening. I'll be back next week, but I think I'm going to be begging. So be prepared. In the meantime, stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clappers coming your way on these same frequencies. The song, the new false love.
theory. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am
the bitch. The red, white, and blue is spit on you.
Trying to reach my freedom of speech and expressing myself, torching the symbol of oppression. Let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth that's off the way I see it? Well, I'm going off berserk, cause the system works to jerk. My people, the people all around the pigs work. Tell me I'm wrong, though, that's my right in this writing. The Constitution, yo, that's an illusion. Huh, suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover, the red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm the lover of this flag, like many others take the same turn. Like me, they yearn for the flag too.
Flag. I'm only doing what you So what? I'm not scared of you. You're black, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn.
Yeah. 99.5, Mr. Lyon. 5 minutes after 3 o'clock. 99 Sinker, WBAI. 212-209, 2900 right here at 99 Sinker on a Thursday morning. This is how we do it. Burning the American flag to ashes with no apology and true political protest, especially after the mistake of the nation's speech, yo. 99 Sinker, now you know why we had to call the show Burn, Baby, Burn. List Alive 99 Cinco Dodoy. Yes, I am. That's us.
Your love is on fire.
Globalizing flag burning. This is the only flag burning show where we burn red, white, and blue to ashes before 5 o'clock. Yes, I list alive.
Hey, I love what you got in the car.
This is Pacifica Radio at its best.
I don't pretend to be Romeo, no. Hey, I didn't rehearse no love lines. But everyone tells me no, 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 no. Hey, you give me all of your time.
Glenn Ford, Robert Knight, great show, great analysis.
Burning,
yes, I am. Uh-huh.
Burning,
yes, I am.
Your love is on burning.
5 o'clock shadow on the radio tonight, yo.
Burning, burning,
yes, I.
Burning, burning,
Robert Knight, one hell of a show, yo. Great political analysis. Back to flag burning. Here we go. Make yourself happy. First things first, who's got the weed? Yes, I am. Roll me a mega split. Now, make yourself happy because we're gonna make you happy. Read to your boy on the radio, hear them tune ya. David Cap, highly unlikely, yo.
But everyone tells me no, 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 no.
Highly unlikely, the hardest reggae. Working reggae band in Strong Island, hear them tune ya, burning.
Burning, 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 burning.
Flag burning time.